Chapter 36. In the days following his capture and imprisonment aboard the strange and filthy new ship, Charlie was granted access to common areas with other captive crew during mealtimes. Each of the men, he noted, wore the same slender band around their neck. A few also sported a filtering wrap around their previous owner's control collar, but the vast majority wore just the lone device. The guards watching them all sported similar versions of the same bandolier-style pouches, though their underlying attire varied from man to man. Also, it appeared the crew of the ship was not limited to the grayish, human-looking species he had first encountered, though they were a definite majority. Many other races were represented, and to his eye, all appeared to have one thing in common once you got past the whole alien thing. Each had a basic humanoid shape, and an apparent degree of fitness. Studying them quickly became a pastime during meals, as he forced himself to eat the unappealing slop scooped onto his metal tray. "Nutrition is nutrition, and you can't escape if you don't have the energy for it," he reminded himself at every mealtime. It didn't make the food taste any better, but his determination to obtain his freedom at least helped him keep it down. Somehow, he had actually managed to escape his original captors, and in so doing, had found himself in an even worse situation. Charlie only hoped his next chance at freedom wouldn't turn out so bad. The chow hall was packed wall to wall, and Captain Saruman had apparently not wanted to spring for sound-deadening tech to keep the noise to a dull roar. As a result, the cacophony of a dozen disparate languages was a rumbling buzz in his ears at mealtimes. And while the dozens of other captives had languages in common with one another, Charlie was the lone human, a situation that he had accepted would not be changing. Amid the whirl of voices, trying to single out any particular language from the mix was almost impossible. Almost. One language, however, stood out. The magic words used to control the voice-activated devices aboard the ship. Those had a very distinct sound to them, and for whatever reason, those words sounded the same whether he had a translation unit functioning or not. It was something of a boon for Charlie, as his previous captors had been careful with such language around their slaves, whereas this new bunch were either careless or simply didn't give a damn. In either case, he paid close attention whenever one of those strange words filtered his way to his ears, eager to learn a new voice command. His sing-song trick to remember them all was getting longer and more complicated, so he started breaking them into chunks of words, memorized to a short tune rather than one long one. He didn't know what every one of the commands did exactly, but the basic gist was enough for now. The pattern continued for over a week, the ship hopping from planet to planet, various men captured and collared on each world, forced to become part of the reluctant crew. In short order, the craft seemed to have reached capacity, with nearly all of the cells now occupied by new residents. Despite his dislike of the gruel fed to them, Charlie had more than once been forced to fend off a would-be bully trying to muscle in on his food. It was like a prison yard in that respect, he reasoned, everyone trying to be top dog and take advantage of those weaker than them. Of course, the guards held the real power, and if anyone really acted up, they'd be put down with one of a number of voice commands, each of which Charlie took care to note. Interestingly, it didn't seem as though the slop had to be pointed at the intended target to function, a design quirk that caught Charlie's attention. If it worked that way, somehow sussing out the command speaker's intention, then perhaps he didn't even need to be facing the doors he wanted to open when speaking the command. Should he ever get his hands on one of the devices, that is. After their meals, the ship's grimy galley crew would perform the most basic of cleanups. Not so much cleaning the space as moving dirt from one place to another. It was for this reason Charlie selected the same seat at every meal. He would, without fail, wipe down his section of the table and seat every time he ate, and after a full week, though the surface was still discolored with age, his little zone had at least finally ceased feeling sticky to the touch. That slobber ship he had first been imprisoned on was so much different by comparison. With the aesthetic choices of Captain Tour and his demand for cleanliness, one area where expense was not spared was maintenance and upkeep. His ship was spotless, and a mess was not tolerated. Captain Saruman's craft, on the other hand, was the polar opposite. Spills were mopped up, but only just. And the waste removal systems were horrid in most of the cells from what Charlie could see every time they walked the corridor to the galley. It was an odd realization to have, but Charlie found himself actually missing the comparatively clean imprisonment he suffered while Captain Tour's captive. And there he was afforded a translator at all times, though it may have been a poor quality one. As his captivity stretched on, much to Charlie's pleasant surprise, he found himself learning the different sounds of each species' language, even picking up a few words of several of them overheard in passing. He still felt like an alienated foreigner surrounded by locals, but it was a start. The other prisoners, while lacking translators, at least were not the lone representative of their species on board, and tended to congregate in groups of their own kind, sticking with those they could easily understand. It made sense, of course, but it was also a problem in Charlie's eyes, a weakness they could address, but wouldn't make the effort. They're all so dependent on their translation tech that they don't even bother to learn one another's language. What if there were a power outage or something, and the translators stopped functioning on their worlds? They'd be stuck, unable to communicate with people other than their own, just like we all are here. It was a familiar bit of tribalism he had witnessed back on Earth throughout his life. Even while building the Azbru, he had seen the different disciplines fracture from the others, grouping together even during meals and social break time, regardless of whom they worked with. Engineers ate with engineers. Flight crew ate with flight crew. Lab techs and ground support, and the list went on and on. All the while, Charlie observed them from his own little nook away from the others. It wasn't so much that he was a loner, nor that he was antisocial or a crippling introvert. He was simply engrossed in his work, and the constant gossip and chatter was more of a distraction than a pleasing social engagement for him. He liked to call himself an extroverted introvert during his military service, gregarious when need be, but opting to skip the more raucous outings with the others. That followed into his civilian training and subsequent jobs. Sure, he enjoyed a good party as much as the next guy, but if his head was busy working a problem, the stimulation of a loud room could quickly become overstimulation, leaving him exhausted. But he could smile and put on a social face as good as the next person if need be. He just chose to avoid those situations when possible, opting to focus on the current task his engineering mind was running through at high speed. He could always step away from the work if he wanted to socialize and be part of the club. Suddenly, he realized perhaps he had been taking that for granted. He was the lone human aboard a ship full of aliens, none of whom he could understand or communicate with, light years from his home world, and without a soul to talk to. On top of that, even if his translator device was functional, he doubted he had much to talk about with his new band of ruffians and thugs. Didn't think I'd miss the guy, but what I wouldn't give to have to listen to another one of Tuk-Tuk's little pep talks right about now. Charlie's thoughts were interrupted by a klaxon alarm and the lights within the ship turning a reddish hue. The guards jumped to their feet and began yelling, either forgetting or simply not caring that the men couldn't understand what they were saying. The arm gestures were clear enough, though. "Come this way," the waves urged them. The assembled captives hurried from the galley, leaving behind a mess of food and trays. Someone would have to clean it later, but that didn't seem to be a priority at the moment. With great haste, they were hustled back into their cells. Only a handful kept out and directed to follow the guards once the others were locked up safe and sound. A great shudder rumbled through the ship as it sharply increased speed. "Oh, please don't let me die in a filthy, shit-stained cell in deep space," Charlie muttered to the walls. The craft bucked, then pulled some serious G's, which meant a particularly harsh maneuver given the lack of gravity in space. Charlie saw spots before his eyes when the pressure suddenly let up. He strained his ears, but heard nothing. Thumps on the hull, however, he could feel. But what the unsettling rumbles meant, he could only guess.